Welcome to this week's message from A New Church. For more information, or if you'd like to contact us, please visit our website, newchurch.nz. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy this message.
A lot of sermons are sort of very emotional, and there's not a lot of violence and gore in some sermons. And as guys, I sort of wanted to have a look at some Old Testament stories and really sort of just talk about these incredible acts of courage and that really, as guys, it's like, wow, that's just awesome. So I hope women can also really relate to some of this morning. We're going to be looking at David and David's mighty men. I love David. He's one of my Old Testament favorite characters. And basically one of my favorite Bible characters of all time, because he was so real, he was so genuine, he was so passionate, but we can understand all his frailties and weaknesses, and we can learn from those as well. So let's just have a look at 1 Samuel 22. Before we do that, because it's David and his mighty men, you know, a lot of the times David stood alone, but most of the time he stood among others, and he was part of a team. And I don't think it was just David that became great and did what he did. First of all, it was because of God in and through him. And secondly, I really do believe it was the people that he had around him. And because of that, we see even with the battles, under David's rule, they never were defeated once in battle because of those that were around. A lot of the times, the victory was won, not just David wasn't a part of the victory, or I guess he was, but he wasn't the main aspect as to why the armies of Israel won. So we're going to have a look at his mighty men. 1 Samuel 22, how it began. David's running in fear of his life from King Saul, who's jealous, he's demon-possessed, and he wants to kill David. So David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. Soon his brothers and all his other relatives joined him there. Then others began coming, men who were in trouble or in debt or were just discontented, until David was the captain of about 400 men. In trouble, in debt, who were discontented. I just looked up a few other Bible translations, and these are the words that they used describing David's men. In trouble, bitter in soul, desperate, having a bitter spirit, in desperate circumstances, angry, unsatisfied, having a grievance, offended, vexed in mind, bitter about life, mistreated, unhappy, oppressed with debt, set in anguish. Sort of sounds like church. These were the men that God gathered to David. They weren't whole men. They weren't perfect men. They weren't successful men. They were broken and desperate men, just like the church. And God took them and made something powerful out of their lives. And God wants to do the same thing, exactly the same thing with you and with I. So we're going to be looking at David's mighty men. God didn't give him these incredible warriors and heroes right from the get-go. They were a mess. So we're going to look at David's mighty men. They're sort of categorized. There was David's three mighty champions, and then it talks about the 30. And in the 30, there was another three that led the 30. And so let's have a look at the first one, Jashobeam. I might call my son Jashobeam from now on. 2 Samuel 23:8. These are the names of David's mightiest warriors. The first was Jashobeam, the Hachmonite, who was leader of the three mightiest warriors among David's men. He once used his spear to kill 800 enemy warriors in a single battle. I don't have any problem believing that, because God's an incredible God. He's a supernatural God. 800 men in one battle. I remember when I was a young fella, Rambo First Blood Part 2 came out, and there was like a big sort of a rebellion against that movie, because they reckon it had the highest kill count in any movie up to that. I think he killed like 75 people. This dude killed 800 people in one go. Just imagine. It's like John Wick with a spear. 800 in one go. If there was one characteristic about Jashobeam that we can learn from, he did not give up. We might be not killing enemies, but we are facing problems constantly. So you just replace the killing the men with dealing with problems, 800. He never gave up. He never gave up after one man or two or 10 or 400 or 700. He did not give up. How did he kill 800 men? Probably one at a time. He faced one challenge after another, and he did not give up. That's the characteristic that we can take away from this guy. He didn't give up. And you know why? Because it's not in our nature anymore. As fallen human beings, we gave up all the time, but we gave our life to Jesus. Spiritually, he gave us new DNA. It's not in our redeemed DNA to give up. 2 Corinthians 4, 16 to 18. That is why we never give up. Though our bodies are dying, our spirits are being renewed every day. For our present troubles are small and won't last very long, yet they produce for us a glory that vastly outweighs them and will last forever. Though our bodies are dying, our spirits are being renewed day by day. You know, we're getting older in our bodies, but we should be getting more passionate for Jesus day after day. So often it's like, well, that person's gotten saved way back in 2000. He was passionate then, but now he's sort of settled down a little bit. We should be getting more on fire for God day after day. Our spirit soaring with God. You know, we should be having all the senior saints up the front on a Sunday morning and showing us young people how to be passionately in love with Jesus. Nervous laughter. 2 Timothy 4, 7. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Galatians 6, 9, let us not grow weary in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not give up. I think a lot of the times we don't see the breakthrough, we don't reap the harvest because we just give up. How do we know that breakthrough is just around the corner? Let's not give up. Second mighty man, Eliezer. 2 Samuel 23, 9 to 10. Next in rank among the three were Eliezer, son of Dodai, a descendant of Ahoah. Once Eliezer and David stood together against the Philistines when the entire Israelite army had fled. He killed Philistines until his hand was too tired to lift the sword. Other translations was his hand froze to the sword, which happens historically. And the Lord gave him a great victory that day. The rest of the army did not return until it was time to collect the plunder. Characteristic of Eliezer we can learn from, not just as dads or men, but as New Testament believers, loyalty. Now, when your soccer team is losing, having a losing streak, you don't bail on it and join another soccer team that's doing a bit better than you. It's unheard of. You stick with your team. If you've been a lifelong supporter of one team, you still support them even when they're going through a low patch. Loyalty. Standing next to the people that God has called you to journey through life with, through the thick and with the thin, because we absolutely need each other. And in this case, there was only one other person that was loyal to David. All the rest of the army fled. They just took off. It was just David and another guy. And then when they had won the great victory, just two of them facing how many? I don't know, a vast army. Then they thought, oh, it's safe to come up out now. And they came back, and then they started to loot all the bodies. Loyalty. John 6, 66 to 68. So Jesus starts talking and saying some pretty challenging things to the crowds. At this point, many of his disciples turned away and deserted him. Then Jesus turned to the 12 and asked, are you going to leave also? Other translations, are you abandoning me also? Simon Peter said, Lord, to whom would we go? You have the words that give eternal life. Let's remain loyal to Jesus. In this day and age where people are trying to rewrite the Bible to say what they think it should be saying, let's stay loyal to Jesus. No, it's going to be tough sometimes. It's going to be challenging. Things happen in life when we don't understand it, but we can always trust the character of Jesus. Because he alone has the words of eternal life. Nothing else can give us eternal life. It's Jesus. 3, Shema. 2 Samuel 23, 11 to 12. Next in rank was Shema, son of Agi, from Harar. One time the Philistines gathered at Lehi and attacked the Israelites in a field full of lentils. It's like a cousin to beans and peas. Lentils. The Israelite army fled. The Israelite army does a lot of fleeing. But Shammah held his ground in the middle of the field and beat back the Philistines. So the Lord brought about a great victory. Again, the majority runs away. The majority won't take responsibility. But there's something about Shammah in this field full of beans. I don't know if it was his field or not, but he's like, enough is enough. I'm going to take ownership of the situation. Everyone has run away, but I am going to take full responsibility. I've been called to be a soldier. My responsibility is to stand firm and to fight against the enemy. And no matter how many people have fled or run away or disappointed, I'm going to take responsibility. In this field full of beans and lentils, I'm not going to let them take this field. What is your lentil patch this morning? What has God called us to take responsibility for? You might be saying, well, Simon, I'm only just doing cups of tea on a Sunday morning, and you know, I'm not like someone up on stage. Now, if we can't learn to take responsibility and to take ownership and to stop passing the buck, God will not give us more responsibility. The parable of the talents is interesting because the master goes away on a great trip and he gives his master's gives the servants talents or resources and says, I want you to invest these for me until I return. Two of the servants do, and the reward for the servants is to be given more responsibility. If we are actually doing the Christian life right, it should be a progressive journey of being given more responsibility. The old Simon Drake, I hate responsibility, run away from it. Don't want it. Don't want to run the risk of disappointing people. But the new Simon Drake understands that this is a part of the kingdom of heaven. God gives us more responsibility. He watches in the small things and then he entrusts more. And the amazing thing is God always gives us the ability with him to do what he's asked us to do. Are you a Shammah this morning, or are you one of the other guys that just run away? Let's be Shammahs. What is your lentil patch? Learn to take responsibility for what's been given to you now. Don't pass the buck and say, oh, it doesn't matter, or someone else will do it. Take responsibility. Number four, the 3 of 30. So we had like the 3 champions, and then we've got 30, and then we've got 3 of 30. I know it's a little bit confusing, but 2 Samuel 23:13 to 17. I won't read it for time, but these guys loved David, and David was really thirsty. He's been hiding in the cave of Adullam again, the Philistines' camp. So these three guys think, well, we're going to get some water for David. We're going to encourage him. So they break through the Philistine lines, grab the water, come back, and want to try and give it to David. But David's like, I'm not going to take this water. It's like holy. I'm just going to use it as an offering to God. If there was one characteristic about these three guys, they learned the art and the skill. They understood the value of encouragement. Be an encourager. Not just to your leadership, we absolutely need it, but make it one of the characteristics of your life is to be an encourager. Everyone needs people that will encourage them. What does the word encourage mean? It simply means to give courage. And you know what? Every single one of us have been given an unlimited supply of courage that we can give to someone else. There's no limit on that. Be an encourager. Because if you're not discouraged right now, probably the person next to you is. This is a statistic that I read this week. Over 50% of pastors are currently discouraged. So if it can happen to pastors, it can happen to every single one of us. We all need encouragement. There's too much discouragement in this world. Number 5, Abishai. Abishai, son of Zeruiah, the brother of Joab, was the leader of the 30. He once used his spear to kill 300 enemy warriors in a single battle. It was by such feats that he became as famous as the 3. Abishai was the most famous of the 30 and was their commander, though he was not one of the 3. 2 Samuel 21:15 to 17. Once again, the Philistines were at war with Israel, and when David and his men were in the thick of battle, David became weak and exhausted. Ishbi-benob was a descendant of the giant. Sounds like a Star Wars character. Ishbi-benob was a descendant of the giants. His bronze spearhead weighed more than 7 pounds, and he was armed with a new sword. He had cornered David and was about to kill him, but Abishai, son of Zeruiah, came to David's rescue and killed the Philistine. The characteristic of Abishai that we can all give away, or we can all take away from this, be a hope giver. Not just an encourager, but be a hope giver. It says very explicitly here that the Philistines were at war, they were in the thick of battle. David became weak and exhausted. And if it wasn't for this guy, Abishai, David would have most probably been killed. But this guy said, no, I'm going to bring hope. I'm going to stand by my king, and I'm going to fight beside him. And it was because of him that David was able to survive. If it wasn't for Abishai, David would have been killed. You may be that person. Your calling in life may be to be an Abishai to someone who absolutely needs encouragement and hope in a time in life where everything is falling apart. Now, David wouldn't have survived, and we hardly hear about this. I bet you probably never heard the guy's name. But if it wasn't for him, David would have been killed. I love the Lord of the Rings books and the movies. And, you know, you think, well, Frodo's the main character, and he's given the mission to get rid of the ring of Sauron. But I really don't think Frodo is the main character or the real hero in that whole story. It's his best friend, which is Samwise Gamgee. Because if you think about it and you remember it so many times, Frodo would have failed if it wasn't for his friend Samwise. Now, I know I've shared this before, but so often we think that success in life is to be the hero of the grand story in our life, but maybe true success and true fulfillment in life is if we stop thinking that the world should be revolving around us and we think, well, maybe God's called me to be a Samwise Gamgee to someone else who's called to be a Frodo. And the more I think about that, the more I think I'm actually right. Because so often we get caught up in comparison and performance, and really when you boil it all down, self-centeredness. But what if we started to think about life a different way and our calling, which is to encourage others, to give hope to others, to see others succeed? Number 6, Benaiah, 2 Samuel 23:20-23. There was also Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, a valiant warrior, other translations, a courageous warrior from Kabzeel. He did many heroic deeds, which included killing two champions of Moab. Another time, on a snowy day, he chased a lion down into a pit and killed it. It's like, there's no opportune time here. It's like, well, it's snowing, everyone else inside, but I'm just going to go out, I'm going to deal with this lion. Once armed only with a club, he killed a great Egyptian warrior who was armed with a spear. Benaiah wrenched the spear from the Egyptian's hand and killed him with it. Deeds like these made Benaiah as famous as the three mightiest warriors. He was more honored than the other members of the 30, though he was not one of the three, and David made him captain of his bodyguard. Characteristic of Benaiah is to be courageous, which means simply to do it afraid. Now, we sometimes think to be courageous means that we're fearless, but actually it's not a good definition at all. The only way we can be courageous is if we're fearful, but we do it anyway. We do it afraid. The definition here, the sign of a courageous person is someone who feels fear, recognizes fear, but still goes on to do what he or she believes is right. To take responsibility, to do what needs to be done, to do the right thing, even though it may be terrifying for you. I love that story. Another time on a snowy day, he chased a lion down into a pit and killed it. We don't know the background story. Maybe it was a lion that was terrorizing the community or the village. I read a book recently, and these adventurers got lost in some wilderness somewhere, and they come across this tribe, and they worship this, like, it's a fantasy book, a giant wolf. And this giant wolf comes every now and then and drags away, like, the children of the village, and they, like, out of fear, that they're worshiping this beast, and they're, like, trying to appease it. But one of the lost adventurers think, well, this isn't good. Why is everyone putting up with this? And he goes off, and he, long story short, kills this giant wolf. Now, so often we settle for less, and we would love change, but we don't realize that maybe change needs to come through us. And that the great famous motivational life coach Tony Robbins says this, and I love this quote. I've been thinking about it a lot lately. Change happens when the pain of the same becomes greater than the pain of change. So, and it's crazy to think that we'll get different results by just doing the same thing over and over again. So I don't know if it's the visionary part of me, but this absolutely keeps me up awake at night. We want to see more visitors to church. We want to get out into the community more. We want to see God do incredible things through our schools, through our ministries. We want to see this city impacted for Jesus. And we can think, oh, well, we can pray and we'll just do the same thing as we've always done and be faithful. Why don't we just think outside the box and think it's time to do things differently? And there is going to be pain in the different, in the change. But I'm getting to the point where it's like, well, the pain of the same is actually getting overwhelming. So for me, as a leader who wants to shrink back, who wants to be shy, who never wants to confront, it's like, well, I have to go and have some crucial conversations now. I want to see us do incredible things with God in us and through us. I want to be one of those people that do it afraid. Because in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, I just don't want to be where we're at now. God's will is for us to expand and increase. And hopefully you can apply that to your life and your situation. Doing it afraid. In conclusion, there were 37 mighty men in all. And you can read the story, and it carries on, verse 24 to 39. And I just imagine if this was made into a movie, it would probably be like an R16, absolutely, but it would be amazing about David's mighty men. There were 37 in all, but the army at the time, or at the end of 2 Samuel anyway, verse 24, it says, there was 800,000 capable warriors in Israel who could handle a sword, and 500,000 in Judah, so well over a million. And yet we have these guys that started off incredibly broken and incredibly rough around the edges, but they were the ones that took responsibility, who did it afraid, who encouraged, who were hope givers, who stood when everyone else fled. 37 men out of over a million men. It's the same army. And time again, we read that when circumstances came, that the army fled, but these men stood. They took responsibility. So my challenge for us as men this morning, are we one of the 37 in the army of God in 2020, or are we one of the million who are still part of the army and are still on the winning team? But no stories are written about the million except that they always ran away when they were faced with challenges. And they came back to get the blessing that the 37 had rightfully won. So are we one of the million, or are we one of the 37? Because I don't necessarily think that the million are going to change this world. I do absolutely think that the 37 will. Because we saw it here again under David's rule. They didn't lose one battle. Although most of the people ran away, there were a few that stood and fought with their lives. John Wesley says this, if I had 300 men who feared nothing but God, hated nothing but sin, and were determined to know nothing among men but Jesus Christ and Him crucified, I would set the world on fire. 300 men is what he believed would it would take to change the world. How many men would it take to change Whangarei? Daniel 11:32. They that know their God shall be strong and do exploits. Again, you may be saying, well, Simon, I'm broken, I've got issues. So were these guys. The deciding factor is they that know their God. It's having a relationship with Jesus. That's where the strength comes. 1 Corinthians 1:26 to 29. Brothers and sisters, so we'll include the woman with us now. Consider who you were when God called you to salvation. Not many of you were wise scholars by human standards, nor were many of you in positions of power. Not many of you were considered the elite when you answered God's call. But God chose those whom the world considers foolish to shame those who think that they are wise. And God chose the puny and powerless to shame the high and the mighty. He chose the lowly, the laughable in the world's eyes, nobodies, so that he would shame the somebodies. For he chose what is regarded as insignificant in order to supersede what is regarded as prominent, so that there would be no place for prideful boasting in God's presence. If you feel lowly, if you feel discouraged, if you feel like you're a nobody, if you even feel puny, you are qualified. You qualify to be one of the 37, to be a mighty man and a mighty woman for God. So my challenge and my declaration for us this morning, don't give up. Take responsibility, give courage, give hope, and do it afraid. Don't give up. Take responsibility, give courage, give hope, and do it afraid. Let's stand up, please. Simon Peter in the New Testament now, he had an incredible encounter with Jesus regarding a miracle of fish, and he comes back to Jesus and he falls at his feet and he says this, "Go away from me, Master, for I am a sinful man." Simon Peter and the other fishermen, including his fishing partners Jacob and John, the sons of Zebedee, were awestruck over the miracle catch of fish. Jesus answered, "Do not yield to your fear, Simon Peter. From now on, you will catch men for salvation." After pulling their boats to the shore, they left everything behind and they followed Jesus. I love that story because Peter realizes that Jesus is the answer, and then he is very, very aware of his failings and his frailties and his sin. And one of the huge problems with sin is it makes us want to distance ourselves from God. It's the worst thing we should do. We need to be running to God. And so Peter realizes how full of issues he is. And yet Jesus didn't say, "Well, you're right, Peter. You can just stay over there and wallow in your self-pity and we'll go off and change the world." No, he gives Peter, even in that moment, a call. And he teaches him, "Don't yield to your fear. From now on, you will catch men for salvation." It wasn't like, "Well, you may if you work really hard." He says, "No, this is going to happen, Peter, because you know me, because you've surrendered your life to me. This is what's going to happen, and this is what I'm going to make happen through your life. You're going to catch men for salvation." And what was Peter's response? He left everything and he followed Jesus.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope it was an encouragement to you. To contact us or to find out what's happening at our church, please check out our website, renewchurch.nz.